91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This afternoon, a panel discusses ramifications of last month's Supreme Court decision approving same-sex marriage. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. There's a new battleground over marriage rights. How does the law affect those who have religious objections to same-sex marriages? A recent AP poll of Americans shows 65% favor individual religious liberties to 39% who support the rights of gays and lesbians. 59% think wedding-related businesses should be allowed to refuse service to same-sex couples. We'll have a panel on hand to discuss these issues and, of course, take your calls. First, NPR and regional news. And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman on this Tuesday.
Hi.
Hello.
With last month's Supreme Court same-sex marriage decision, more questions arise. What of individual religious liberties versus gay and lesbian rights? And what other considerations face the LGBT community? First, in our studio, we welcome back University of Miami Law Professor Donald M. Jones. He teaches constitutional law. He's a frequent national lecturer and has been an editorialist for the Miami Herald and the New Times. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Welcome to you, Dr. Jones. And with us in the studio is the Deputy Director of Equality Florida Action, South Floridian Stratton Pollitzer. He's a key fundraiser and spokesperson on LGBT issues for the organization. Thanks for participating, Stratton.
Great to be here.
Stratton, let's start with you. Right before the show began, we were talking about, okay, so we last time you were here, the fate of same-sex marriage was uncertain. Now it's been approved. It is legal, the same-sex ruling by the Supreme Court. You say it's just a starting point. What do you mean?
Well, it's certainly been an incredible celebration and, you know, very important to pause and mark this significant milestone in the march towards equality, including LGBT equality. But now that we've finished sweeping up the confetti, we do face the reality that there's an enormous amount of work left to do. In Florida, in 57 of our 67 counties, it is perfectly legal under state law to fire a gay or transgender person, evict us from our homes, deny us service in a restaurant or movie theater. In two-thirds of our school districts, LGBT students have no specific protections from bullying, and these are the school districts where students need it the most. The more hostile climates where they don't have a gay-straight alliance, where they're probably afraid to be out to their families, where maybe they're not even out to their best friends and they're totally alone and they have no protection. And then the transgender community in our state, and you know, fortunately, this is a part of our population that there's increasingly great public education and awareness about, but transgender Floridians continue to face just unthinkable levels of discrimination, harassment, and terrible violence. So yes, we are celebrating, but we look to a really important and challenging road ahead as well.
Professor Jones, with this ruling by the Supreme Court, are there parallels with the federal action or the Supreme Court action and the desegregation movement of the 1960s, when it were was federally accepted, but to get it going in the states.
Well, I think that there's a tremendous resonance between the struggle for blacks for civil rights and the struggle that the LGBT community faces, and I think that the single issue that was before the Supreme Court, the single issue before Brown, is the meaning of equality. What does equality mean? And so people frame it as an issue of gay marriage. It's really a question of what does equal rights mean? So, for example, there's been a right to marry since 1967, but the way that's always been interpreted is, well, the audience of that, the people who that applies to are people who are straight. It doesn't apply to gays. And in a sense, if you really ask why, it was because dignity was not given to that social identity. And so what this says is that now we can no longer legitimately stigmatize or segregate a group of people simply because of who they are. So there's a very great similarity, because back in Loving in 1967, blacks couldn't marry whites and whites couldn't marry blacks, because the space of marriage was reserved for people who had a higher level on the social plane. And so what this is a leveling decision in many ways that we've just seen is like the decision in Brown.
Stratton, talk about what you call this intense anti-LGBT backlash that's sweeping the country. In Florida, we had a couple of laws filed this year in the state legislature, but you say there are over 100 of them throughout the country now.
Right. This year so far, we've seen really the most intense anti-gay wave of legislation that we've seen in more than a decade. Over 100 anti-LGBT bills filed in state legislatures across the country. Two of the worst right here in Florida. Fortunately, we were able to defeat both of them, but they moved. They didn't die on arrival. They both saw great progress in our legislature, and it was very troubling. One of the bills would basically have made it impossible for transgender people to use a public restroom that matched their gender identity. And when you think about how despicable and dehumanizing that is, when you're not allowed to use the bathroom, you're really not allowed to participate in public life. You know, and that targets not just adult transgender people, but think of transgender students who can't use the bathroom in their school. That bill moved. The other bill we had was one that would have allowed private adoption agencies in Florida and all religious-based private adoption agencies in Florida, and all of them are religious-based, to discriminate against same-sex couples if that was offensive to their religion. So basically, it wasn't, although clearly gay and lesbian people were the target of that legislation, which almost passed, but it actually said they could discriminate for any reason. They could discriminate against people if they were single. They could discriminate against military veterans. These questions were asked from the floor of the legislature, and the bill sponsor agreed, yes, we can discriminate based on
who
race.
Who was the bill sponsor?
Who's the bill sponsor?
Yeah, okay, sorry about that.
Sorry.
All right. Okay, so you know what I was thinking, though, Professor Jones, when you were just talking about the interracial marriage as being,
right.
I was thinking, because of the questions that have arisen, the questions of religious rights and tax exempt status now with people being with churches, you know, being able to say they don't want to marry gay.
Reasonable discrimination.
But I was thinking how it went back to 1983 in this Bob Jones University. The reason they're worried is because they were denied the tax-exempt status because they prohibited, was it interracial marriage or interracial dating?
Yes, interracial dating.
So what can and can't?
Right. Well, you see, we are in uncharted territory. I can tell you what I think the trajectory, the arc of our moral values is pushing further and further toward tolerance. And I think that in our public space, discrimination against gays is going to be increasingly indefensible. I think that what we've done by the Supreme Court case, we've established a baseline, a starting point. So the starting point is discrimination against gays is suspect. Now, they haven't formally declared a suspect class, but we've changed the frame from which we look at it. And so I think that the Supreme Court do not estimate the importance of that victory, but also don't underestimate the power of the people who don't want this to create what was called a narrative of imposition. So the idea is, and I think it's a false dilemma, the idea is that if gays are able to come into my restaurant and I don't believe in that, that takes away my ability to freely exercise my religion. There'll be colleges who say, well,
so give us so tell us what happens in that situation.
Well, see, the court hasn't spoken to it, but I don't believe that you are interfering with anybody's religion. I think that the key is, and this is an argument that was made when argument was used against blacks, that if blacks have rights to come into my place of business, I don't like them, that takes away my freedom of association. Now, I think all that is misplaced. The reason is that if you're in a public space, and you are licensed by the state to follow the laws that exist in that state, then you should not be able to discriminate. Once you are in that public space.
You need a public business license?
Yes.
In that sense?
Right. In other words, by accepting that license, I think you agree to do business within the parameters of the values of that state, our public values. Sumner said this way when they were arguing against the civil rights bill for blacks, show me anything that is regulated by law, and that should be open to all citizens, regardless of race. So you could just translate that.
So, Professor, I guess that answers then the question that some people would ask is, does First Amendment protect religious views that conflict with civil rights? Does the First Amendment protect
religious views that conflict with civil rights? But I think, for example, if you were in Bible study, if you're in on a public, say what you want to say. Bible study, teach what you want to teach. Believe what you want to believe. But once you come into the public space, I think you now have to obey the laws of the land. You have to, if you hold yourself out as a business, then you have the duty to make that business equally open to all folks and all Americans, all citizens.
And I think, you know, I think that's common sense to most people when you think about a restaurant or you think about a movie theater or you think about a doctor's office, you know, the idea that a doctor would turn someone away from urgently needed care because they found sexual orientation of the person to be not in alignment with their religion. Most people would say, of course you couldn't do that. Of course you couldn't. What folks do is they pull up one silly example of maybe a wedding cake maker and ask, should they have to sell a wedding cake to a same-sex couple? But, you know, it's the same for all of these examples. Just use an example that would be more practical and understandable to you, like
emergency care. It isn't very likely that couple would be asking that baker to bake that cake, is it?
Well,
maybe not. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they went in and you're planning your wedding and you're, you know, you're very excited and you're standing at the front of the line and then in front of a room full of people, you're shamed and, you know, and told to leave that business. And I think most people would think that would be just horrible.
Okay.
We're speaking with Stratton Politzer. He is the Deputy Director of Equality Florida. Also in the studio with us is University of Miami Law Professor Donald M. Jones. We're talking about just an update on LGBT issues, where things stand, and we have another guest joining us after this break.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We resume our conversation with University of Miami Law Professor Donald M. Jones and also the Deputy Director of Equality Florida Action, Heath Stratton Politzer.
And we turn now to another guest for input, particularly at the state legislative level. We have Florida State Representative Holly Rauschein. Am I saying your name right?
You nailed it.
Oh, all right. And she represents District 120, which includes the Florida Keys and portions of South Miami-Dade counties. She's in her second term. She joins us by phone from the Florida Keys. Welcome to you.
Thanks, and good afternoon to everybody.
Representative Rauschein, you filed the Florida Competitive Workforce Act last year in the legislature. What's the status there?
Well, I was actually this time the first Republican in the state legislature to file such a bill. In previous years, I had worked alongside State Representative Joe Saunders as his prime co-sponsor, but I had the chance this year to be the primary sponsor and file that. It was actually one of the first bills that I filed for the legislative session this past spring. we had hoped to get a committee hearing. That was our number one goal. As Stratton mentioned earlier, there was a terrible bill filed, the quote-unquote bathroom bill, and I had worked with the chairwoman of the committee that both of these bills was referred to and had it worked out that she was going to hear that bill, that she would indeed, hear my bill, obviously my bill being the preferable way to move forward in this sort of public policy arena. That ended up not happening, and as Stratton mentioned, the other bill did get a hearing, and mine did not, so I was rather disappointed. Over on my my Senate counterpart nearly had a hearing. His bill, Senator Joe Abruzzo from Palm Beach County, had his bill on the agenda, and it was unfortunately pulled at the last minute. So once the clock kind of ran out on regular session time, my charge was to get as many of my colleagues, my Republican colleagues especially, to sign on as a co-sponsor. And
so
I was
since 2007, this bill has never, or a similar bill, has never gotten out of committee?
No, sir. You're correct.
So how much support does it have outside of the legislature?
Well, we have got a great coalition that has formed around the bill, the Competitive Workforce Act, the Coalition for a Competitive Workforce, which is a coalition of businesses from Fortune 500 businesses all the way down to small local businesses all around the state of Florida have joined in and support this legislation. And so from that standpoint, we are doing an excellent job on really getting, you know, the word out on this bill.
Yeah, you know, I'll just jump in. Yeah. And it's great to have you on the phone, Representative Rashine. You know, first of all, this bill would do a very simple thing. It would add sexual orientation and gender identity to Chapter 760 of the Florida Civil Rights Code. So it would ban discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in Florida. How obvious is that, right? Something like 80% of Floridians can stand behind this legislation. What I love about having Holly on the phone is she represents the next wave of this civil rights movement, because as a young Republican and an advocate for LGBT equality and non-discrimination laws, she shows that this truly can be a bipartisan issue. And it was really amazing to see 12 other Republican House representatives stand with Holly. If we could get this to the floor of either the House or the Senate, we have a hard vote count that it could pass. So even though we haven't had a hearing yet, this isn't one of those where we're going to see a little progress, then a little more. The door is going to fall down. And the fact that we have these huge, important Fortune 500 companies in Florida, companies like the Miami Heat and Walt Disney World and Winn-Dixie and the coalition chaired by Florida Blue and their CEO and most of Florida's large companies, and they want this bill to pass because they recognize that allowing discrimination against LGBT people tarnishes Florida's reputation, makes us look like an intolerant state, makes it harder for them to do business and attract and retain top talent.
Exactly. I mean, how does this affect employers and employees? I mean, it doesn't draw
Right. And these Fortune 500 companies have had these protections in place for decades. But what they've come to realize is the quality of life for their employees mm-hmm. in the community they live matters, too. It's not enough that they be protected from discrimination at work. When they go home and they go to the grocery store, employees look at that. It's why, you know, job recruiters in Mississippi and my home state of South Carolina are at a disadvantage, and Florida has a chance to be a leader on this issue. And Holly, thank you for your leadership.
Representative Rothschild, will this Supreme Court ruling be the impetus to finally get this bill onto the floor of both the Senate and the House?
I certainly hope so, and I have very, very high hopes that it will at least drive the conversation. And, you know, with a policy like this, it's the right way for, as Brent said, for Florida to move forward. It's about recruiting the best and the brightest to our state, where they can feel comfortable not only in their workplace, but, you know, in their homes, in public accommodations and things like that. And, you know, we just got such support driving this with the business coalition that I'm hoping, you know, my other Republican colleagues will see this, and that we'll be able to, you know, continue drawing more support and hopefully get some momentum behind it.
We're speaking with Representative Holly Rothschild. We're speaking with Professor Donald M. Jones, and we're speaking with Stratton Pulitzer. Professor Jones is a law professor of constitutional law at University of Miami. Stratton Pulitzer is Deputy Director of Equality Florida. If you'd like to join in the conversation, our number 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio@WLRN.org, radio@WLRN.org. Stratton, you say that you see Florida as a leader in the next phase of this civil rights movement. Is that what you're referring to? You're referring to bills like this?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, when you look at the United States and you look at state law, There are about 20 states across the country that have passed non-discrimination laws and anti-bullying policies protecting the LGBT community. And then there are about 30 that haven't passed much at all at the state level. And the thing that's never happened is we've never seen a truly bipartisan coalition stand together around LGBT equality. We've seen Republicans join with Democrats in small numbers in states like New York when they passed marriage. But we have a red legislature. And so for us to say we have a majority support, that means you really are seeing this become a bipartisan issue. And that's the key, not just to winning Florida, but to winning the South, to winning the Midwest, to winning the rest of the country. And the country is looking at us. I know sometimes here in South Florida, folks like to pretend like we're not a part of the South. We are. Florida is a southern state. And if we can do this here, if we can be a harbinger of equality here in the South, then we can send a message that it's possible in Georgia and Tennessee and Alabama as well.
Representative, could you also touch on this business of that possibly churches could lose their tax protections if they don't comply with this? What's behind that and who is saying that?
Sure, and I'm sure there's some questions out there. The bill that we currently have in front of us, and actually that I will be filing again this year, has those religious exemptions in there. A number of my colleagues over the last couple of years have expressed some concerns, but we have really dialed in on really tightening the language and allowing for those rights to still be expressed, but while at the same time still not allowing LGBT discrimination.
Roughly, how is that worded? I don't mean exact, but just roughly, you know, how is that worded?
I don't have the bill text in front of me, but basically how we incorporate the chapter that Stratton mentioned is falls under those same, religion, race, sex, marital status, disability. It is written basically the same as that code. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But one point I did want to make is, across the state of Florida, we've seen a number of municipalities and counties file their own ordinances, anti-discrimination ordinances for the LGBT community. And what point I really want to drive home is that my bill really provides the state and employers and companies a consistent statewide approach to eliminating and prohibiting LGBT discrimination in our state.
That's an excellent point. You know, last year when Miami-Dade added protections countywide for based on gender identity, we reached 53% of the population of Florida is now protected. That means we're the only state in the country where more than half of the state has these protections, but we don't have a state law, right? So we really are at this tipping point in Florida. Many see this as first in line now to pass the
it's
next
primarily
law.
The urban areas, I suppose.
No, you'd be surprised. I mean, yes, most of our major metropolitan areas have these protections now, but we have seen cities that are Republican dominated pass these protections unanimously. You know, just this year, Leesburg, which is a little tiny conservative town outside of Orlando, passed these non-discrimination protections. When you look across the state, it's not a north-south divide, and it's not completely an urban-rural divide. We are starting to see these protections pop up everywhere.
Again, our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email, that's radio@WLRN.org. radio@WLRN.org.
Okay, and we'll be taking your calls after this short break. We are speaking with Stratton Pulitzer. He's the co-founder and deputy director of Equality Florida. Professor Donald M. Jones, a professor of constitutional law, criminal procedure, and employment discrimination at the University of Miami Law School, and Representative Holly Rashine in her second term representing District 120 in Florida. We'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman, Joseph Cooper, and we're speaking about civil rights, actually, is what we're speaking about. But in this case, we're focusing on the LGBT community with Stratton Pulitzer, the co-founder and deputy director of Equality Florida, Professor Donald M. Jones from the University of Miami Law School, and Representative Holly Rashine. She represents District 120 in Florida. If you'd like to join in the conversation, we'd love to have you. Our number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. 9576, or you can easily email radio@wlrn.org.
Professor Jones, earlier we were talking about,
yes,
you were comparing the time frame between,
yes,
this ruling and, of course, the historic Brown versus Board. Could you,
yes,
touch,
sir,
on that?
Well, Brown was decided in 1954. In that case, the court decided that Jim Crow and segregation in public school was unconstitutional.
Separate but equal didn't exist.
Right, right, right. They outlawed separate but equal famously. And I think that that while that was a tremendous victory in law, in order for the culture to accept, in order for society to move forward with that, it took about 14 years. A case called Green versus Kent County. Between that time, the court said we're going to move with all deliberate speed, which really meant we wouldn't move at all. And I think,
what does that mean?
The deliberate speed is a paradox. It means you're going to think while you're moving. So you ever just imagine you're thinking while you're taking each step. And so it was gradualism, which really meant nothing. But you see, I think that the bottom line was is that in order for a legal decision to move forward, you have to have power at the level of the grassroots. You have to have a coalition of people who want to make something happen. So there was a coalition between blacks, labor, and I would argue northern liberals, which finally coalesced to move forward in 1968. From 1968 to about 1988, there was real progress on school desegregation. I think that the lesson seems to be that coalitions have great power. And so I think that there seems to be a logical coalition between blacks, women, and gays on many of these issues. And I think that, you know, I assume that work is already being done. I think more needs to be done. And we need to think in terms, because I think these issues affect all of us. Tolerance for gays is more tolerance for everyone. I think that equality is indivisible. And so I think that all of us have an interest in pushing forward these rights, and there's a basis for, and if we can stop being divided and realize that we have more in common than what divides us, then I think this can go forward.
And Stratton, before, you were going to say something about this. You were going to talk about the popular support.
Oh, well, I think that in terms of the length of time that it will take, for instance, to implement marriage equality nationwide, one of the things that is a little different this time around, you know, many of the same arguments that were used against the LGBT community, that were used against the African American community, that were used against women, you know, throughout history, we see this sort of recycling of these arguments in favor of discrimination. One of the differences here is that popular support for marriage equality, mm-hmm, passed 50% on this issue, you know, some time ago. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to lead to a faster level of implementation, but I'm in complete agreement with Professor Jones that there is, you know, a linkage among all of these systems of oppression, and that we benefit when we recognize those linkages and come together. And it certainly was not lost on us, just the incredible synchronicity that on June 26th, we had President Obama welcome, mm-hmm, marriage equality from the Rose Garden, and then race down to Charleston to deliver that breathtaking eulogy that so many of us have watched again and
again. Actually, I read an AP poll, a recent one, that said the support of same-sex marriage is down 4% since June 26th. What scenario could cause that? Is that suddenly the reality makes people who are against it be more vehement?
You know, I think you look at a single poll like that, I think you just have to consider that a wobble. You know, it's hard to say what the reaction would be. I can tell you that years ago, when we would win marriage equality in a state, we would see a significant drop in support as marriage equality was arrived. But in recent years, when states achieved marriage equality, you actually saw popular support go up. I mean, here in Florida, when we had marriage equality on January 5th here in Miami and then statewide the next day, it was really a statewide celebration. There was not this huge pushback or protest. It was just thousands of people who loved each other finally getting to marry.
Representative Holly Rauschein, I understand you might need to leave us. If you do so, if you have to, we certainly understand. But before you go, one quick question. How will your bill affect same-sex individual and adoption and foster care?
My bill doesn't specifically deal with adoption or foster care, but what I'm happy to report on is that we did pass some significant adoption reform regarding LGBT couples. For the past 5 years, they've been able to adopt, but it wasn't really official from the state legislative or the legislature standpoint. So we were able to pass that, and then, as Stratton mentioned earlier, stave off that conscience clause bill that was filed towards the end of regular session.
Well, we want to thank Florida State Representative Holly Rauschein. She represents District 120 in her second term. It includes the Florida Keys and portions of South Miami-Dade counties. We thank you so much for being with us today, and we wish you the best with the bill.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And getting ready to actually file it as we speak. It's in bill drafting right now. And I'm just going to continue to sign up as many supporters as possible, and also not only my Republican colleagues, but my Democrat colleagues, and try to get this thing passed this year.
Representative, could I ask you just for about 30 seconds more?
Sure, sure.
Oh, the caller went off, but he wanted to know why the bill hadn't gotten to the floor.
Well, several reasons. Leadership issues, committee leadership issues, really. The team that we've put together has done a stellar job in lining up our supporters, lining up the votes. And I think that's key. If you can't get a bill out of its first committee, you certainly can't get it to the floor. So that's kind of the hurdle that we're going to face. We really need to focus on our committee references going into this next legislative season. And it's my hopes that we're going to have a winning agenda and be able to get this to the floor on both the House and the Senate side, and then ultimately have the governor sign it into law.
Stratton?
Yeah, Holly's right. We have majority support, but it's key people in key positions. You know, here in Miami-Dade County, the chair of the Senate Judiciary, Miguel Diaz de la Portilla, he is the first committee of reference for the bill, or was last year. And, you know, he's someone who we believe we can work with, and we're hoping that this will be the year he schedules the bill. And what's going to happen here again is everybody's sort of waiting to see who's going to jump first. The minute this bill starts to roll, it's going to steamroll.
Well, we certainly want to thank you, Representative Holly Rauschein.
Thank you, and I look forward to doing the show perhaps again in the future with some really good news.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Professor, we were talking before the show about how law instructs.
Yes.
It doesn't just constrain or order or command. Talk about that, because that's an important, aspect of this.
Well, you know, when Brown was decided, the court didn't issue any order. It simply declared that separate but equal has no place in public education. And I think that what happened after that was an incredible dialogue, a soul searching. And so we're really in a battle for hearts and minds. We're really in a battle to change the meaning of what it means to be gay. We need to get people who see that as something, as an identity that is disfavored, to rethink their assumptions, to challenge the assumptions that have been the stigma that has been protected by tradition. And I think that once the law comes out and says this is wrong, that changes the way people have to forces people to question themselves, that forces a debate, and these issues that we'll talk about, where there's a baker who doesn't want to bake a cake and so forth, all of these cases are going to promote dialogue. Now, I believe that because rationality itself, reason itself, favors equality, that I think the truth will win. But so I think that the more it's discussed, the more the intolerance will be corroded by reason.
And I just wanted to ask both of you about this Pastor Protection Act that July 1st, Chris Walker, a pastor at the Cathedral of Power International Church in Claremont, launched a petition on change.org calling for Governor Rick Scott to sign the Pastor Protection Act. He says he recognizes that same-sex couples now have the right to marry, but we want our right to say no. We want it in writing. Is there any need for this?
This is a ridiculous bill. You know, I mean, no church is required to marry a same-sex couple. Church is required to marry anyone. It's a civil ceremony that we're talking about. I'll just this is something our executive director Nadine Smith said recently. She said this bill is as absurd as it is unnecessary and insulting. And she said, if Plakin really wanted to do something, he should be supporting the passage of laws that address actual discrimination, not inventing problems where none exist. This is a waste of time and a distraction.
This is what I call a narrative of imposition, or you could also call it a threat narrative. So the idea is that by asking for equality, that threatens. The asking for equality takes away or injures. And I think that asking for equality is not injurious. It doesn't threaten anyone. No one's right to practice religion is threatened by giving a person who's gay a right to work or access to public accommodation. And so what this is really doing is attempting to reframe the question, to get to spin it, to get people to see this as somehow threatening them, to arouse irrational emotion. And so these are the things that when black people talked about, we want affirmative action. Well, this threatens meritocracy. Well, this threatens standards. So this is a classic instance of attempting to try to take the moral high ground when you don't deserve it. And by the way you frame the question. These kinds of things are expected. This is part of a backlash. It's rhetorical posturing. But I think that more and more people are going to start from the proposition that discrimination against any minority is wrong. And I think that having placed that as the baseline, I think what the Supreme Court case does, I think that these kinds of arguments will take some time. It will be a challenge, but I think these arguments will be pushed back. Mm.
We're speaking with Professor Donald M. Jones. He's a constitutional law and criminal procedure professor in employment discrimination at the University of Miami Law School. And Stratton Politzer is the co-founder and deputy director of Equality Florida. We are going to take one more short break. Before we go, let me give our number one more time, 1-800-743-9576. We will take your calls as soon as we get back from this short break.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, University of Miami Law Professor Donald Jones, and also the Deputy Director of Equality Florida Action, he's Stratton Politzer. As promised, we go to our phones, 1-800-743-9576, if you'd like to join in. First up, Claudia in Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my question. I appreciate this discussion, and I wanted to ask this question to some experts in that as we definitely need to move towards more protection, civil protection for all of our citizens, and as far as marriage equality and any kind of discrimination against women or any races, in civil marriages, tell me how will we evolve to accepting polygamy, in other words, marriage of a man to more than one woman, and discuss what would happen as far as education for children and et cetera. In other words, protection in a civil ceremony for all citizens. Is this the next anti-discrimination?
Okay. Professor?
Well, I think that there's a big difference, a radical, complete, absolute difference between the claim that gays are making and this issue of polygamy. It seems to me that the problem that gays have had is that they were treated as criminals. They were treated as they were being stigmatized simply on the basis of who they are. If there's a basic principle of constitutional law, is you can't be punished based on who you are. They weren't allowed to get married. They up until Lawrence versus Texas in 1997, they were punished for expressing the intimate association. And so what the courts are saying is that you can't stigmatize intimate association. People should have freedom to choose their lifestyles. So this is an important question that fits in line with a series of decisions going back to Pierce versus Society of Sisters in 1926, the liberty to live your life the way you choose, the right to choose, the right to intimate association. Now, this question of polygamy is something separate. I'm not aware that polygamists are a minority which have a history of discrimination. Are they a discrete, insular minority which have a history of discrimination? I don't think that they are. So I don't think that works as a claim that would be brought before the court with any seriousness. I think that that claim has typically been used to say, well, it's sort of like the slippery slope argument. Well, if we agree to this, then what's next? You know, I think that would be an outrageous claim to make. It'd be frivolous. I don't think that people have to worry that that is something on the horizon at this point in our history. I think that the claim that that gays are making is a much more noble, much more dignified claim. And it's really not just for gays who are being liberated. It's America. It's democracy that is becoming more true to itself.
And we move along. Next caller, John in Miami. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call and for this discussion. It's super important. And first, I would like to say that I am a member of the LGBTQ community, and I grew up in a Christian church, and I have no problem with a church denying my wanting to get married, because I have found denominations that do allow for gay marriage ceremonies in their institutions, such as the Congregational Church. Mm-hmm. The Episcopalian Church, I hear, is having talks of it or just discussed allowing it in their ceremonies. But I have a question that I'm not sure if it's directly relatable, but I think of mega churches when it comes to the tax exemption policy. And I'm just wondering, where did this tax exemption policy originate? How was it created for our country? Unfortunately, I'm not very educated in that subject. And I was wondering if one of you or most all of you could talk about why churches are tax exempted to begin with.
Okay.
We'll hand
professor?
That off to you, Professor.
Yes.
Well, I think that the tax exemption of churches is based on a separation of church and state. So if you're going to have freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, there should be this sphere of autonomy in which churches can operate. So the government really have no right to tax based on the idea that we want to protect them. We don't want to use power to tax as power to destroy. And so by keeping it separate, then that's like an immunity to people to express their beliefs in a space that's free and protected. I think that the problem comes up when churches operate as businesses. They'll go on the internet and say, look, okay, come to our church, we'll do your marriage for you. And then they'll go to a state and say, give us a license so that we can do these kinds of things with this aspect of our business. And some churches operate universities, and they say, come to our school and we'll give you an education. So once the church enters that public sphere, then I think what gays are saying, now you should give us the same rights. And their religious exempt organization is saying, well, we shouldn't have to, we should be able to discriminate because that's our religious belief. And so now you can't take away, the government can't take away our tax exemption simply because we're expressing our belief. And what that does, it mixes up the fact that they're operating as businesses when they act as a university, not in a traditional way that a church operates.
Professor, we have a caller who wanted to know the difference between a civil union and also, I'm still looking on the screen, and I guess religious approval.
Well, a civil union, as I've always understood the term, is something very different from marriage. So churches were, at one point they said, well, instead of letting gays get married, because marriage was viewed historically as union between a man and a woman, we'll give them a civil union. Problem is civil union doesn't give you the same status. What marriage does, it confers status. It gives more, you become a full-fledged citizen. You people respect it. It shelters your children. Your children born to a marriage are viewed with legitimacy and respect. Now, without that, then you stigmatize intimacy and you stigmatize the children who might be adopted by. And so, so civil unions don't do what marriage does. Civil unions is something less. And in many ways, to say that gays can be get a civil union but not marriage was a kind of second-class citizenship stamp.
Right. You know, Stratton, something you mentioned, and it never even, I never thought of it like that, but you say that this civil rights movement is different in that the LGBT children are born into families that reject them, which makes it different than, let's say, the Black or women's movement. Talk about that.
Well, earlier Professor Jones was talking about changing hearts and minds, and I think ultimately that is the final goal of this this civil rights movement. And the thing that we work so hard to overcome for many of us is the family rejection, the social exclusion that we have faced. And it's not enough for us to create zones of equality, because a child born in rural Mississippi is just as likely to be transgender as a child born on South Beach, you know. And so the reality is, or, you know, for a child born in Okeechobee to be a lesbian as a child born in Wilton Manors. And so what we're seeing is young people are coming out at earlier and earlier ages, in part because this is a generational issue and millennials have no problem with this issue. And so the likelihood that young people are going to come out to their friends and then be added to their family is much greater. And what we see is there's a very strong possibility they'll be born into a family that does not favorably look upon them as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. And it's the reason that we see such a horrendous level of LGBT youth homelessness. Studies say 30 to 40% of all homeless youth are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, even though we make up about 5% of the population. Mm. So, you know, this idea that we can just pass laws and win protections that people can use, no, we really do have to get to the place where no matter where that child is born, they have a chance to be loved by their family and safe at school and embraced by their friends and their colleagues.
Professor, the decision was a 5-4 decision.
Yes, sir.
What was the main point of the dissenters?
Well, I think the dissenters are saying that the Supreme Court had no right to try to intervene in a cultural tradition, that we have a cultural tradition and they're going to try to, and the Supreme Court are like, it's like playing God. We're going to redefine what marriage is. We're going to change the values that have defined America. And so from their point of view, this was simply like saying that a child becomes a man at 12, or, you know, who are, Robert said, who are you to make these decisions? This is for the society itself. It's not for you. Maybe it's for the church. And I think that the problem is they work from a different paradigm. And from their paradigm, they don't see the issue that this is a human being who's trying to live, they're trying to live their lives and express love without being stigmatized for doing that. And so they can't see it. They can't see the issue because they're so rooted in assumptions which are hundreds of years old.
Well, we want to thank you. I think one thing that you were saying, Professor, and you were saying, Stratton, and so was Representative Rauschein, is that there are glimmers of hope, but there's still lots of work to do.
Yeah, we're on our way, but we got to keep pushing.
Well, we want to thank Professor Donald M. Jones. He teaches constitutional law, criminal procedure, and employment discrimination at the University of Miami Law School. He's also an author that we had on of Fear of a Hip-Hop Planet. Also with us, Stratton Pulitzer is the co-founder and deputy director of Equality Florida and a key spokesperson on LGBT issues and a regular contributor to major television, print, and radio outlets throughout Florida. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us.
And thank you for tuning in. The program was produced by Polly Landis with production assistance from lead producer Richard Ives. If you didn't catch the whole broadcast, we have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Technical direction from Paul Leary. And more information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like. Tomorrow's program looks at the go-to source for many buyers, Consumer Reports. We'll have the nonprofit's president and CEO, Marta Tellato, with us. Consumer Reports dates from 1936. It even forbids review of products to be used within advertising. Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now from NPR News.